Just look at how cute these little girls are. Adorable. What I think these young ladies are aspiring to do is this. Korean culture mimics the duality expressed as the yin and yang principle, revealing subtle elements of femininity and elegance exquisitely demonstrated in this beautiful and dynamic fan dance, as well as in the passion and fire of gumu, a traditional sword dance practiced in Korea, performed with special costume, dance, motions, and music. While it is known for its grace, the symbolic use of the dual swords keeps to the militaristic origins of this dance. The legend of Gomu states that a young boy, Huang Chang, lived during the Silla dynasty around 660 AD, and he had an unusual talent for the sword dance. His talent brought him great fame, his name was known far and wide, even in foreign lands. Then one day, a king from another dynasty invited him to his court to perform his great skill. The boy agreed and started to perform his sword dance, but in an act of great defiance, killed the king right there before the royal assembly. Huang Chang was executed, but the dance is still treasured all over South Korea, surviving as a folk dance and cultural asset, with different regions having different versions, always with lots of symbolism. Extra emphasis is placed on the movement of the costuming, notably the sleeves, in harmony with the movement of the dancer. It's a primarily female dance, and masks that were originally part of the costume are no longer worn, with many aspects of the sword dance having been forgotten during the previous centuries, as well as attempted suppression during the Japanese occupation of the Korean Peninsula. And it's an amazing example of cultural endurance in the face of adversity. Seoul, the capital of South Korea, is a huge metropolis where modern skyscrapers, high-tech subways, and pop culture meet Buddhist temples, palaces, and street markets. 50 million people, about half the country's population, lives in the Seoul capital area. Situated on the Han River, Seoul's history stretches back more than 2,000 years, with the earliest documented settlement starting around 4,000 BC. Originally, the city was entirely surrounded by a massive circular stone wall to provide its citizens with security, but has since grown beyond those walls. And although the wall no longer stands, there are gates that remain near the downtown district of Seoul, and this is what they look like. I'm sorry to say that this gate, better known as the Great South Gate, was lost to arson, unfortunately. The 550-year-old structure was made of wood and stone. It was completely destroyed in 2008. The oldest wooden structure in Seoul, an iconic reminder of old Korea in this modern Asian city. early religions of Korea were based around shamans, who often employed dance performances as part of their rituals, including exorcisms. The Chiyoyongmu was a part of a highly elaborate ritual performed at New Year's specifically for the royal court, and was intended to cast away evil, draw in prosperity, which is of course an oversimplification of what's happening, but for now let's just say that it was part of a much wider Korean mythology concerning Chiyoyong, who incidentally is son of the Dragon King of the Eastern Sea. So the dance is bound up in many ancient understandings of Korea's history, traditional dress, attitudes to medicine, the roles of wooden masks. The symbolic properties of colors and flowers, and the important role of the five elements in creating balance, harmony, and of course health. Korean Buddhism is distinguished from other forms of Buddhism, having developed a new, integrated, and holistic approach, a unique spiritual identity. When Buddhism was originally introduced to Korea, around the time of the unification of North China in 376, or about 800 years after the death of the historic Buddha, shamanism was the indigenous religion in what is now Korea, resembling the beliefs of the Celts and Germanics, which emphasized natural elements such as fire and water. As it was not seen to conflict with the rites of nature worship, Buddhism was allowed to blend in with shamanism. Thus, the mountains that were believed to be the residence of spirits in pre-Buddhist times became the sites of Buddhist temples. These early, original inhabitants of Korea are thought to have had cultural and ethnic or racial affinities with the Ainu, who in historical Japanese texts are the indigenous people of Japan and parts of Russia. Many Ainu today have been completely assimilated into Japanese society, adopting its identity and citizenship, and as a result having no knowledge of their own ancestry. Descendants of the Ainu are relatively easy to spot for anthropologists. They tend to have lighter skin, more body hair, especially facial hair, like long beards, and higher bridge noses than most Japanese. It's ironic that while some Japanese tend to look down on the Ainu as a sort of second-class citizen, skeletons of about 1,100 Japanese, Ainu, and other Asian ethnic groups have concluded that the revered samurai of Japan are actually descendants of the Ainu, not the racial stock from whom most modern Japanese are descended. In fact, Hiroshi Oshima, the former Japanese ambassador to Germany, believed that the noble caste in Japan, the daimyo and the samurai, were descended from the gods of celestial origin, which was similar to the Nazis' own belief that the Nordic race did not evolve but came directly down from the heaven to settle on the Atlantic continent. Anthropologist C. Loring Brace of University of Michigan said, and I quote, "This interpretation also explains why the facial features of the Japanese ruling class are so often unlike those of typical modern Japanese. The Ainu-related samurai achieved such power and prestige in medieval Japan that they intermarried with their royalty and nobility, passing on Jomon Ainu blood in the upper classes, while other Japanese were primarily descended from the Yoi," end quote. Of course, this also explains why so many Korean face masks, which I said earlier were associated with divinity, ancient gods, are depicted with long thin noses and facial hair. Indeed, the Ainu are a most interesting enigma, but not nearly as interesting as the native inhabitants credited with occupying Korea and Japan before the Ainu.
Anthropologists call them Asiatic Caucasoids because they had facial features and body hair that seemed more European than Asian. In fact, the Ainu are thought to be a remnant of a very ancient population that was once widespread in the Old World.
This is 28,000 years from China.
What we know of these early Asians is based on just a few skulls.
It's one of the earliest anatomically modern Homo sapiens in Asia.
One of them is a 28,000-year-old specimen from China, which looks very much like the 9,000-year-old spirit caveman.
And there are some marked similarities in the facial architecture.
Tremendous similarity in the shapes of the eye orbits in the sense that they're both somewhat rectangular, similar interorbital distance, overall appearance of the orbits, the shape of the nose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But many of the features, including the very heavy mandible and the prominent mm-hmm. symphysis here, those features are very much the same.
A growing number of scientific discoveries across Asia, such as the massive pyramids and 4,000-year-old blonde mummies of China, buried with swastikas, have been providing increasing archaeological, genetic, and legitimate academic support to the ancient Asian myths and legends, such as the son of the Dragon King, which proposes plausible and likely alternatives to the obsolete, politically motivated dogma concerning human origins or hybridization and population dispersal. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an author, producer, and anthropologist who works independently and relies on word of mouth. So I'm very appreciative to those who take a moment to share these videos. And I'd like to say thanks to my subscribers who have generously made a donation to Atlantean Gardens. That's the nonprofit organization that enables and supports my efforts. Every little bit helps and goes a long way. Also, thank you for the encouragement in the comment section, as well as sharing your own personal stories and experiences. I do read them, I learn from them, and when possible, try to make videos in response to requests, like this one, which came from an enthusiastic subscriber yesterday. Eager to hear something on Korea. I was happy to do so. Hopefully you found it interesting. If so, give me a thumbs up. Have a great weekend, and I will see you next time.